Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, one second, there we go.
Hi, I'm Danielle van der Donk, and you're listening to the Arsenal awesome Arsenal.
That's fine.
Can I just keep going?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm Danielle van der Donk, and you're listening to the Arsenal awesome Warm Arsenal on arsenalblog.com.
Perfect, thank you. Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com, the best podcast about the Arsenal women's team. The fact that it's the only podcast about the Arsenal women's team is neither here nor there. It is still the best, even if there were hundreds of them. You are with me, your host, Tim Stillman, and your other host, Pippa Monique. Pippa.
Hello.
Hello. What are you saying? How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm really good. Happy that the season's about to start. Well, by the time this is out, I'm sure it started, isn't it?
yeah, could be. Yeah, I understand you've got a bit of a mad house at the moment, so like...
Yeah, so apologies for any noise. summer holidays, it's like a fun house in here.
indeed. So we've got a really great episode for you this week. We've got two really, really good interviews, which we'll kind of drop in during the show. But I mean, first off, there's really no better place to start than with the most recent pre-season friendly, which saw a Jill Roard hat-trick and Arsenal beating Tottenham 6-0 at Meadow Park, which kind of... It was a good game, wasn't it? Because it had been like maybe a slightly worrying pre-season before that with some not great results.
But then again, we were coming up against European teams that are very, very lucrative in what they do. So, it's getting us prepared for next season Champions League football. But to come up against Tottenham, newly promoted side, I was expecting a win, but not that huge of a goal difference.
yeah. I spoke to Joe about this afterwards, and he said, you know, they realised they did some of the games. But like, you know, the Bayern Munich game, that was more of a commercial thing than anything. And he said, like, look, we wanted to do the first half with Champions League teams and then the second half with, you know, WSL teams. So we had a London derby with West Ham behind closed doors, had this London derby with Spurs as well. And you know, they looked like, again, like the opposition was slightly inferior, but they did genuinely look quite a bit better, didn't they?
Yeah, of course. But it was a very entertaining game for us, obviously.
and of course, Jill Roard scoring a hat trick on the day as well. Did you speak to her afterwards, or was that Sam?
I didn't get a chance to. I know Sam did. Jill actually approached me to come and speak to me, but it wasn't. I was already in a mid conversation, and I was kicking myself afterwards that I didn't just cut off my conversation and get a chance to speak to her, because she was clearly buzzing to, you know, get a hat trick. I know it's just a French pre-season game, but she was clearly in high spirits. Don't worry, I'll get a chance to speak to her during the season.
Yeah, and actually at the time of recording, Netherlands are playing and she scored for her country as well. So hopefully that's like a good omen for the West Ham game. But I think really the story of this game is the return from injury of Jordan Nobbs, who came on as a second half substitute, scored a goal pretty much straight away, and I mean, you were in the kind of mix zone as well afterwards. This game was all about Jordan, right?
100%. I mean, I know that the hat trick and all the other... there were so many other people on the score sheet, but Jordan Nobbs to return from an injury, quite a disappointing summer for her not being in the World Cup, and to come back home, first game, first few minutes under her belt, well, that's not behind closed doors. And to get... And it was an amazing goal. Was it just on a half volley or volley?
It was a first time finish, wasn't it? Aside from I have to confess, I slightly missed it because I think we scored just before. yeah, we'd scored just before, and I think I was still tweeting about the third goal.
Yeah, see? See, I was already filming because I was reacting to the previous goal, and then Jordan Knob scored, and I was like, oh, I just missed it. But I'm so happy for her, and I got a chance to speak to her afterwards, and you know, she's really positive, which is great to see. It takes a really strong mental state to get back from such an injury, and she's really positive. And one of the things that stuck out to me, she said that she wants to become one of the best midfielders in the world. She didn't say female. One of the best midfielders in the world, and that says a lot to me. So I'm really excited about the season now.
Is that the first time you'd interviewed Jordan?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've known her a little while. Like I think I first interviewed her in about 2012, something like that. Yeah. And it's been a real pleasure to watch her grow as a footballer, because she kind of came to Arsenal as a teenager with like lots and lots of potential. But mm-hmm. I think she already is one of the best midfielders in the world. And for me, when I watch Arsenal, you know sometimes you just latch on to a couple of players and you think, yeah they're Arsenal. And I look at players like like Leah and like Jordan. And I mm-hmm. think, yeah, that's Arsenal to me. When I come and watch this team, these are the people like I feel like I identify with and I think about first. And seeing Jordan back is just such a, obviously it's great for Arsenal, but just even like, I don't know about you, but on a personal level, I almost feel like, not pride, I think that sounds quite weird, but I feel this like immense,
your little sister back.
yeah, like I just feel this like satisfaction of watching her play for Arsenal, playing for Arsenal again, because she's such like an easy player to relate to if you're a fan.
Yeah, 100%.
And as we said, like Pippa and I had the chance to talk to her after the game. She was a bit exhausted, bless her, because as you can imagine, there were a lot of people wanted to talk to her, and mm-hmm. I won't mention the name of the guy, but stupidly I allowed someone to go before me to interview her. Thanks. and like Pippa and I were queuing up also to interview her, and she actually had to ask to stop the interview.
How much number are you going to be?
Yeah, because it was like 33 degrees. She hadn't played for 9 months, and bless her, she was absolutely knackered. But
to note, it was so hot that day as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we were standing in the sun, and like, but you know, she's a total pro with this kind of thing. So let's roll that interview in, and you might hear that she's kind of gasping for breath a little bit along the way.
All right, first of all, Jordan, you played a behind closed doors game last week and played 20 minutes, but what were your emotions today at being able to run out at Meadow Park and to cap it with a goal against Spurs?
Yeah, these emotions were another level, I think, to be back at Boreham Wood. It's just the best feeling. I've played here for God knows how many years, and to be back on the pitches is all I've wanted to do for 9 months. So, yeah, it was a good feeling.
And you still had a massive part in the title win last season, even though you missed half the season. Of course, you missed the World Cup. How much more determined does that make you to kind of really grab hold of this season?
If I'm being honest, I think the main thing is keeping me fit. I think it's looking after my body and doing the right things. But, I think my ability will hopefully show and prove how hard I've worked over the next 9 months. I want to be known as one of the best midfielders in the world, and... I want to play in a major tournament and show what I can do in centre midfield. So it's just a building block for me. But, this club has got me in a good place right now, and it's just about building on that.
And you talked about kind of keeping yourself fit. Obviously, Joe's added Jill Roard to the team. Kim and DVD really stepped up in your absence. It seems like he can really afford maybe to kind of take it a bit more slowly with you.
Yeah, I think... no one wants to rush me back. I think it's just building my minutes and getting that game time. And if I'm honest, I think we've got a big squad for a reason, because we've got a lot of games coming up. We've got 3 games in a week, and I think Joe needs that to, keep pushing his team, but also, keep performing at a high level. So, now we're in Champions League football. We need a bit bigger squad, and I think what we've added to this team, I mean, Jill obviously getting a hat-trick today, I think we've added some strength and depth, and that's the best thing for this club.
And Joe said on the website earlier this week, he talked about the injury actually being quite a good thing for you in terms of, he said that it made you more conscious of your role as a leader in the squad. First of all, do you agree? And assuming you do, is that a conscious thing, or is that something that's just kind of crept up with the process?
Maybe a bit of both. I think you see a different outlook on the game and the way people feel when they're injured or maybe not playing or, you know, you see a lot from the outside because you're not in training and games, so you see a lot of, you know, the talking that goes on behind the scenes, and I think whatever way I can help with that, I want to be a part of that. But, you know, I'd like to think that everything that happens to you in football, it adapts and makes you grow as a player and a person, and this injury, you know, has made me hopefully a stronger person.
And I spoke to Dan after her comeback up at Liverpool, and she said, you know, I'm conscious that the recovery is not over yet, not physically, but also the psychological side. How long do you think it will take in terms of learning to trust your knee again?
I think you trust it, that's why you're back on the pitch, but I think it's just more about looking after your body and, you know, not fatiguing yourself too much, because when fatigue sets in, you obviously isolate and weaker part of your body. So I think it's just more about me looking after my minutes and building my confidence up. But I think you don't really know that time, but I think on the pitch you've got to be confident, or, you know, I think you need a bit longer to just develop that process.
And final question, the Fiorentina draw in the Champions League now, does it feel much more real now after kind of, I mean, you played last time you were in the competition 5 years ago. How exciting was it when that draw was made and now that's on the horizon?
Yeah, our WhatsApp group was going off, and it's just great to be back. I think we knew that we could have had a different draw, and I think the fact that we're going to Italy and Joe's obviously got some connections with Italy as well, it's just a nice moment for us to be back in Champions League, and we're not there to, you know, to just play in one game, we're there for the long run.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so that was Jordan Nobbs upon her comeback, and I think she got a few more minutes as well this week with the under 21s actually, to try and keep things sharp so that she's ready for the new season. But I mean, the happiness of seeing Jordan Nobbs back, probably tempered by the news around Danielle Carter earlier this summer, Pippa.
Devastating news. I still cannot get over that. My thoughts are with Danielle. I don't know how she's coping, but I know she'll come back stronger. I hope she will come back stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting just down from you at the Emirates when it happened, and I think we both knew straight. She knew what she'd done straight away, and I think you can see when a player knows. And I think we said at the time, didn't we? We were like, "Oh shit, that's the same knee, isn't it?"
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Just such like such a crusher for her, and you know, to have to go through that recovery again, and like you say, it's not just like the physical side of it, but the mental side of it for her, just, you know, it's such a downer, really.
It is, and it's more annoying the fact that it's such a common injury in the women's game, and that, I guess you're going to get onto that now, aren't you, about who we spoke to recently about why women get these ACL injuries in female athletes in general.
Yeah, precisely. It's a question I've been asked a lot, like, you know, a fair few Arsenal players, you know, namely Jordan and Dan have had ACL injuries recently. Yeah. Kim Little had one 2 years ago. I mean, if you've, you know, any women's footballer that's played for at least 5 or 6 years usually has one, and a few, you know, Megan Rapinoe's had three. And that, yeah, I think that tells you a lot. And Claire Rafferty as well, she had three. It's super common, and I'm asked about this all the time, like, why does this happen so often? And I think the stats say that women footballers or women footballers and basketball players as well are something like 4 to 6 times more likely to rupture their anterior cruciate ligament than men, which is an amazing statistic, really. Yeah, Pippa and I thought, rather than kind of theory, because there's lots of theories out there, right? I don't know how many of them you've read.
I've heard one, something to do with the hips ratio to the knees, is it?
Yeah.
That's a common one that I've heard quite a lot recently, and I'm sure you've heard quite a few over the years.
Yeah, that and the fact that, like, the pitches aren't great, like, which I think is a small part of it, and, like, boots are still made for men's feet, which I think is a small part of it, but... yeah, I've read a lot of these theories, but Pippa and I thought, rather than kind of theorising, why don't we talk to someone who knows?
Yeah.
So we were absolutely delighted and privileged to be joined by Pete Gallagher, who is a knee surgeon who specialises in repairing ruptured anterior cruciate ligaments. And Pippa and I had a word with him, just talking a little bit about the basics, about what the injury is, how you repair it, but most notably why female athletes suffer it so much more often than men. So here's that interview with Pete now. One of the questions I'm asked most commonly when we post stories on Ask Blog News, particularly about injuries, of which we've had quite a few at Arsenal over the last year or so, is why there's such a proliferation of knee injuries in the squad. And you'll have seen recently Danielle Carter ruptured her anterior cruciate ligament last May, and then unfortunately on her first start back in July ruptured it again, which is really tragic for her and for Arsenal. And but in kind of better news, we've got Jordan Nobbs, who's just coming back from having ruptured her anterior cruciate ligament, and lots of people always ask me why is this such an issue at Arsenal, and I try and explain it's actually more of an issue in women's football and female athletes, who are a lot more susceptible to anterior cruciate ligament injuries. But instead of me telling you that, Pippa and I thought it would be good to get an expert on the podcast to actually talk a little bit about anterior cruciate ligament injuries and why they're so prevalent in female athletes. So it's my absolute pleasure to welcome knee surgeon Pete Gallagher. Pete, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem at all. Hi, nice to come on and chat.
Pete, if we start with the basics first of all, absolute kind of layman stuff, what is the anterior cruciate ligament? What happens when it ruptures, and why is this such a bad injury?
The anterior cruciate ligament is one of the four main ligaments that keep the knee in place, and it's one of the most common injuries in sport, especially in rotational sports, along with the medial ligament. And it stops the knee from moving forwards, the shin bone moving forwards and the thigh bone. But its main role is actually to keep the knee centred, so that when players twist and turn on the knee, everything stays in the right place. Unfortunately, it's a really common injury, and when it tears, the ligament stretches and then ruptures, and the ends tend to come apart, which means it's very, very unusual or almost impossible for the ligament to heal naturally by itself. This means that once it's injured, players will continue to have problems with the knee giving way when they go to twist and turn.
Okay, and you know, looking specifically at Arsenal forward Dan Carter, like I said, she ruptured her cruciate ligament 14 months ago, came back in March, has been training and playing ever since, and she's re-ruptured exactly the same cruciate ligament this time around. But the first time that she did it, she actually played on for 7 minutes after the ACL tear until she had contact with the ball again and realised she couldn't continue. But the second time she knew absolutely instantly. Are there different types of ACL rupture or tear that might create kind of different sensations?
There are different types, and you can have a partial injury to the ligament and you can have a complete injury to the ligament, and sometimes it can just be stretched out a bit like a rubber band that's been overstretched but hasn't ruptured. But it's really common for people to injure the ligament initially and often try to return to playing, sometimes in the same game, but more often they think they've just sprained the knee and they try to let it settle down. But the next time that they do the movement where you need that ligament to keep the knee in the right place, and they go to turn or twist, and it doesn't do its job, and then the knee buckles and gives way underneath them. And so she probably injured it initially in the first injury, but didn't think much of it because she could still move in a straight line. It was just a little bit painful. And then when she went to turn and twist and rely on that ligament, it let her know that it wasn't working properly. And second time round, she'd be much more conscious and aware of that situation, and therefore the sensation of the knee coming out of place will have drawn her up short and stopped her from being able to continue.
It sounds so painful, as we know, but our striker, Daniel Carter, as we mentioned, injured her ACL again for the second time recently. and she's only having her surgery today despite suffering from the injury 3 weeks ago. Why is it a few weeks are required before surgery can take place, and what happens in that interim period?
It's certainly been historically felt that if you have a big injury to the knee where the knee bleeds and it becomes very, very swollen and inflamed, if you then rush into surgery in the very early period after that, there's a bigger risk of the knee becoming stiff and players having trouble with their flexibility following the surgery. That's still a little bit up for debate, but sometimes there are other injuries that need to be dealt with. It's almost always the case that players will need to have an MRI scan to assess the true extent of the injury to make sure that they haven't damaged something else as well, the joint surface, the cartilages within the knee or other ligaments, so that the surgery can then be planned.
And what exactly does the surgery entail? Like, can you give us a brief overview of what the recovery would be like?
So the surgery that's most commonly performed for an ACL tear is a reconstruction operation, which is where another piece of tissue, often the player's central third of their patella tendon or their hamstring tendons, are harvested and then transported into the knee through keyhole surgery to remake the cruciate ligament with that bit of tissue. That creates a new biological ligament, but although it's all done in one operation, that piece of tissue has been moved from one place to another, and so it requires time to bed in, to pick up a blood supply and to become a natural part of the player again, and that's why the rehabilitation takes such a long time.
Pete, it's said in kind of differing articles that I've read that female footballers in particular, I think athletes, are somewhere between 4 to 6 times more likely to rupture an ACL compared to a male counterpart. And I think there are a lot of theories doing the rounds for this, going from boots are generally made for men's feet, but also the kind of the wideness of hips in women, and the kind of gait is slightly different, which sometimes creates a different landing. Why do you think it is that female footballers are so much more susceptible to this injury?
It's definitely the case that female athletes, and especially rotational athletes, so footballers, basketball, netball, etc., are much more at risk of this injury. And as you say, there are a lot of different theories that have been bandied around. Things like the width of the pelvis and footwear haven't ever really been proven to make a big difference, although it's been suggested in the past. But things like the way that women footballers land from jumps and the way that the muscles around the pelvis and their thigh muscles interplay with each other has a really big effect on the rotational force that goes through the knee. And so there's been a huge amount of work done on jumping and especially landing mechanics for sports people in general, but especially female footballers, to try to reduce the risk of this injury. Essentially, ladies tend to land with their knees coming in towards each other because it's more dignified historically, and that means that the knee tends to twist inwards and rotate around itself as they land on it, which puts them at a higher risk of the injury. And so landing mechanics and jumping is probably the most influential factor involved in ladies' ACL injuries, although other factors that are also probably play a part, such as the hormonal changes that they go through with regards to menstruation and the looseness of the ligaments, and fatigue. So strength has a big part to play as well.
Yeah, that leads me on to my next question, actually. Jordan Nobbs, a couple of months ago, towards the end of her recovery, she gave an interview where she said that she'd been on her period when she ruptured her anterior cruciate ligament, and she's said she'd done some reading and heard that there may be some kind of link. She said that on the day of the game where it actually happened, she hadn't slept well the night before, and she doesn't know if that had some kind of influence. But she spoke about kind of the menstrual cycle being a part of it. Do you think that there's a likely link there?
There has been a fair bit of medical work done on this, looking at whether the menstrual cycle and those hormonal changes in lady athletes has an impact on injuries, and there does seem to be a connection there. The evidence is a little bit loose, as it were, so it's not a hard accepted fact, but there definitely seems to be some influence that the hormonal changes do have an effect on whether you're likely to injure a ligament. And there's even been some suggestion that using things such as the contraceptive pill to regulate those hormonal changes can reduce the risk of injury.
You mentioned that the evidence is pretty loose, but are you aware of any research going into this currently? Like, is there anything that practically that can be done to make women, female athletes, less susceptible to this type of injury?
It's certainly been suggested that the use of the pill can make a difference, but the thing that's been made, that's shown to have the biggest impact in terms of reducing injuries in female athletes, is that training with regards to strength work and jumping and how you land from a jump in terms of the positioning of the feet and the pattern. There's been a huge amount of work done on that in youth football in the States and in female football, and that definitely seems to have the biggest impact.
Just touching back on Danielle Carter's injury, she's re-ruptured the same ACL she did last May. Will this make her physical recovery any different? And will the timeline alter drastically, or will it be purely a psychological task for her to get back on the pitch?
No, it does have a bit of an impact. And so the risk of re-rupturing or re-tearing a cruciate ligament is in the single-digit percentages. But if it does happen, it makes the surgery a little bit more technically challenging second time round. It makes the rehab a little bit longer, and it makes the risk of a further injury actually a little bit higher. Yeah. And so that is part and parcel of the medical or the surgical side of it. But as you quite rightly say, there's a massive psychological impact on tearing your cruciate ligament and going through that rehabilitation. And if you have to do the exact same thing again, almost like Groundhog Day, it has a really big psychological impact on the player.
Did you mention that it's in single-digit figures? Does that mean re-ruptures are common or not common?
They're not common, thankfully. Oh. And so, you know, 90 to 95% of the time, one reconstruction is all that would be required, and people will return to the same level of sport. Unfortunately, that with everything in medicine and especially surgery, there is a rate of failure where you have a further injury and the ligament re-tears or something else happens, and that can be, you know, really devastating to the player because they have to go through the whole thing again.
I think what was just a kind of final question or observation here, Pete, what was interesting in Danielle Carter's case is the first ACL injury she got, it was very much a landing. It was a tackle. She tried to hurdle it and she landed awkwardly. The second time, it was slightly different in that she was already on the ground and had a bit of a collision and her knee buckled, and I think her opponent landed on top of her and her knee buckled underneath, and so the way the injuries happened was quite different. From the way that the second injury happens, is there any sort of suggestion at all that maybe that there was any kind of problem with the first surgery, with the first reconstruction, or do you think that's quite unlikely?
I think it's probably just bad luck. Players are put through the rehabilitation process and they have testing through that process. And there are some what are called return to play criteria that players have to achieve before they're able to get back into full training and then competitive play. And that centres very much around how the knee is moving, how the ligament feels on clinical assessment, but also on some objective testing around strength, their ability to jump, land, change direction, hop for distance, and there are certain parameters that need to be met before you return to play. If you return before you're ready and the muscles aren't strong, the knee control isn't good, then you're definitely at a higher risk of re-injury. But in elite sport, it's not the case that happens. The clubs put them through their paces and really assess the players at the stage that they're ready to play. And so, unfortunately, this is just a bad luck thing that if you push something or bend something hard enough, then it'll break.
Yeah, and I think in this scenario as well, Dan had been back for 4 months. It wasn't like her first game back or anything. She had been playing and she had been training and everything like that. So, yeah, that just sounds hugely unlucky for her. And
yeah,
hopefully...
It's an unfortunate thing, and then we tend to say this to players and patients when they've torn a cruciate ligament, that actually, because of that increased risk in athletes having torn a cruciate ligament, you're a little bit more likely to tear your other cruciate ligaments, so the one in the upper knee, than you are to tear the graft that is put in. And so it is just bad luck.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. And hopefully, kind of as we're recording, Jordan Nobbs is just coming back. Hopefully she'll come back safe and sound, and the same player she always was. Pete, that was absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for that insight, and not least so that the next time someone asks me about this, I'll just keep this podcast on file and just exactly just point them to this and give them their answer. Pete Gallagher, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate
it. That's great to chat to you. Thank you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
So that was knee surgeon Pete Gallagher, and I don't know about you, Pippa, but I found that interview absolutely fascinating.
Super insightful. I learned so much. I mean, there were times that I was queasing a bit because I'm really not good with all those things, but
same.
Because he kind of went into a lot of detail, but it was really intriguing to find out from that perspective what the athletes go through and how they can come back, and just the process mentally and physically. It was really, really interesting.
Yeah. I found what he said about, like, you know, women like for centuries have kind of been taught almost like that curtsy movement to put like their legs inwards to be like a bit more dainty, and how much of an impact that has, like, throughout the generations. Just this, like, really old-fashioned ideal about how, like, women should purport and walk, and how that's like having an impact on, like, female athletes. So I find that absolutely amazing, but it's hugely educational, and we're really grateful to Pete for giving up a bit of his evening to talk to us. A couple of things I think to cover before we go, Pippa. First of all, Champions League draw has been made since the last time we recorded.
Yes,
Fiorentina in the Champions League. Excited?
I'm super excited. I'm assuming you're already going.
I'm actually not. I can't go to the away leg. Now they've they reversed the legs, right? So the away legs first. Yeah. And I'm actually going to be in Brazil. I'm not actually able to make the away leg. So I'm really hoping they get through so I can go to the next round. But I'll be at Meadow Park for the home leg. But
definitely.
I don't know. Do you know much about the player they signed this summer, Lisa Devanna, the Australian striker?
No, I do not. Why, what are you going to tell me about her?
So Lisa Devanna played under Joe Montemurro at Melbourne City. She signed for Fiorentina this summer, and she has made no secret of the fact that she hates Joe Montemurro.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, if you look at her Twitter feed, you don't have to scroll too far down to see her express her displeasure towards Joe. for the time they spent together at Melbourne. And she's been very cryptic and not gone into detail, but
This will be interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm intrigued to see how that plays out. But also Yanni Anth as well.
Yeah, she just recently joined.
Yeah, exactly. And that's quite interesting as well. I'm kind of sad to see Yanni go. I think she offered quite a bit of depth, but
we didn't see the best of her, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. And I think at her age, she probably thought that she wants to play a bit more often.
Yeah.
Other things to cover off just quickly. First of all, the news as well that from next season, all WSL games will be streamed, ungeo-blocked, free of charge, which is...
absolute result for me.
Yeah.
for everyone, actually.
Yeah. I think it's good. I kind of understand the argument that, it kind of maybe cheapens the product by giving it away for free, and actually people should... What I'd have done is say, like, you can stream all the games, but you have to pay, like, £1 or something for each game, like, just to give people the idea of paying for it. But the fact that it's not geo-blocked and the fact that people can watch worldwide, I think that's a huge thing, right?
Yeah, but the only thing that concerns me is, will it now affect attendances at games?
Indeed. Whenever you get into these discussions with women's football, there's so much yin and yang. There's always like a drawback and an advantage.
Yeah.
And you're right, if they want 2,000 people at every game, then maybe this will make it, you know, it's that kind of decision. Is this a television sport product, or is this like a sport for people to watch? But nevertheless, I think certainly, like, for Arsenal fans and for lots of Arsenal fans based overseas, particularly in America, I think this is a huge thing, because people, I don't know about you, people always ask me, like, how can I see the game?
Can I watch the game? Yeah, I get a lot of tweets. I'm always tagged in your tweets. Where can you watch the game? I'm
just
not quite sure, to be honest.
Yeah, and you're like, to be honest, you can't really. But now people can, and hopefully that would drive up a bit of interest. And Pippa, just before we go, season starts in kind of just under a week.
Yeah.
Quick from you. Who is your Arsenal player to watch for this season? Who do you think low-key is going to have a great season?
I don't think this is low-key. I think this is quite obvious. I hope I'm not wrong, but judging by what I saw pre-season, I'm going to go with Giroud, new signing.
Yeah. I think she could. I think she could fit in really, really well. And, you know, that hat-trick against Spurs, obviously a brilliant way to start. I'm going to go with the new signing as well. I'm going to say Jen Beattie.
I knew it was going to go there. She's back.
Yeah, I always liked Jen when she was here first time round, but I think she might take Louise Quinn's place in the team and play alongside Leah, which is kind of a shame, because Louise Quinn's, she'll still play loads, but she's been brilliant. Yeah. But
I mean, it gives us more depth for the more games that we're playing, so...
Exactly. Exactly. I just think with Jen, because she used to be a striker, I think what she offers, like from corners and free kicks, gives us something we didn't have last season. I think she's going to score quite a lot of goals. Actually,
that's a bold prediction.
Yeah. So I'm gonna be like you and go with the new signing, but I'm gonna say it's Jen Beattie. So first game of the season, home to West Ham United. It's during the international break for the men. So if you are in London or around the surrounding area, come down to Boreham Wood, Sunday the 8th of September at Meadow Park. It's a 2:30 p.m. kickoff. Otherwise, you can watch it on the FA Player app, which will be launched this week. And yeah, let's hope that Arsenal can live up to the mark they set last season.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see you there at Meadow Park. That's what I want to see.
indeed, and we'll have match reaction and match previews and all the stuff you usually get as well, and we'll be back with another Arsenal Women Askcast next month. So thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you soon.
See you guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.